I'll be very curious. If she gets the okay to go out and look in St. Albert at this other place, it would complicate things.
She did hear back from the woman.
Did she?
Yes. And the place is quite a bit larger than the other two places we've already seen. It's 672 square feet. But it is 3,900 plus internet.
I didn't understand that.
The new place in St. Albert is quite a bit larger than the two places we have already looked at.
Yeah, I understood that.
It is, but it is more expensive.
Is it?
Yeah, it is $3,900 per month plus internet. But maybe that is a place that you could move for the short term before a place in Sherwood Park comes up.
Well, that would be the purpose for it. I wouldn't want to stay in the, or couldn't stay in such a place.
Yeah. I worry a little bit about moving you twice.
Yeah. Well, I would sure much rather not.
Yeah.
I can assure you of that, because just the physical movement of all these things twice, to make a home twice over, it doesn't appeal one bit to me.
No.
No. But I, as I told her, I am completely resigned now. I don't orient to this place anymore. This is not a home anymore for me.
Well, you've mentally turned a corner, it sounds like.
Yeah. Well, I recognize that my infirmity is really a problem.
Yeah. Mostly because of what might happen, not because of the way that you are now, but what might happen could be terrible.
Yeah.
Could be really terrible. And I don't think any of us can run that risk, particularly you.
No, I think it's right. Of course, the quick answer for me would be to die tomorrow.
That's not going to happen.
No. You know, I was operated on this leg for aneurysm in 2009.
Yeah.
Now I have a sore on my leg that won't heal, which is a sign of deteriorating circulation in that part of the body.
Yeah.
And that, if that continues on,
yeah,
if I don't keep wiggling my toe and so on, that would make me even more of a invalid.
Well, you might be wheelchair bound.
Yeah, would it be. That's what it would be.
Well, you know, your older brother survived for quite some time in a wheelchair.
Not very long.
A year and a half?
I really don't know.
I think it may
was it a year and a half?
At least that. It was might have been two.
He died in March.
Yeah. And he was in the wheelchair when we visited in July. And he'd been in that wheelchair, so maybe about a year. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he had pneumonia. That was what finished him.
Hmm.
And the doctors really didn't help clean him up. They sent him home when he was ill with it still.
Yeah. Maybe they knew what was going to happen.
Well, the problem for Ulrich was that he never exercised.
No. Yeah.
So that even though he had one good leg, it wouldn't support him.
Yeah, no. He was a bit large when we saw him.
Well, Susan looked after him very well.
She sure did, yeah.
I have all the admiration in the world for her, but their relationship was a hostility.
Yeah, yeah.
But that she had the humanity in her to see him through to the end.
Yes, she did.
That was really impressive.
Yeah.
When she just hated his guts.
Yeah.
Well, I just threw out a whole bunch of letters of his.
Yes, I took them to recycling today.
Did you? Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I simply didn't want to read them again. They're so painful. You can't write. Haven't I told you you can't write? You know?
Yeah. There's no point to keep stuff like that.
You know, it's a fundamental difference between Europe and North America. Do you know that? It sets the two continents aside. And I think they will do it forever.
Mm.
And the reason is this, that in North America, both in Canada and the US, we send out our research papers for review to colleagues.
Mm.
It is standard practice. You should always do that.
Peer review, yeah.
So that you get help to get errors of thought out of the way, wrong statistics used on a problem, really technical things that friends will point out to you because they know that they can send their papers to you and you will see it from the same point of view and so you help each other.
Yes, certainly.
That doesn't happen in Europe.
Is there? There's no peer review in Europe?
No. You are expected to write the perfect paper and publish it and then they attack you. It's worst in Germany, but it's very solidly present in Norway.
Mm.
And this is what prompted Ulrich to write such incredible letters.
Yeah.
He wasn't going to help.
No.
He wanted to be impressed. And even when I sent him a copy of my Bhutan book, he found fault with it.
Yeah.
It should have been hardcover. Fuck you. Yeah. I don't know. No, that and that's a continental difference between Europe and North America.
Mm-hmm. It's also an asshole older brother.
Well, that also. That also. He was, on one hand, he could be the kindest person in the world. But on the other hand, vis-a-vis me, he was absolutely poison every time we met. So last time when I was in Norway, he spent all of 5 minutes with me at a mealtime. Otherwise, he wouldn't even be at meal when Susan and I ate. He had the excuse that he had drawings he had to finish.
Hmm.
Yeah. Well, he was a prisoner. I think I agree with Isti. She says that relationship was worse for him than it was for me. He never grew out of it.
Oh, right.
He never grew out of it. And I think I've at least changed away from that punitive kind of approach to living.
Well, it doesn't sound like you ever behaved that way to Halvar, which might be expected.
No. We were... You haven't read this, but I have in my genealogical... In the file that I have... I asked Halvar and Ulrich to join me, and each one of us write a story about our childhood.
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
Have you seen that?
No, but I remember you doing that.
We could have been born of separately on three continents. Mm. We had absolutely nothing to do with each other that was of any consequence. And
your parents should have rounded you guys up together a little better, made you behave better to each other.
If what?
Your parents.
Oh, my parents were not present
they
in
should
the
have,
situation.
No, they should have made you, three of you, behave a little better with each other.
Yeah, but father didn't mix in with us at all.
Yeah, well, that's old time, right? That's what we were talking about yesterday.
And mother treated me vis-a-vis Ulrich the way she treated Maggie.
Yeah.
Exactly the same behavior. So mother didn't understand what she was doing to Maggie any more than she understood what she was doing to me. When she said, you have to be thankful for what I've done for you.
So when you asked your brothers to write like that, what did Halvar write? What was the tone?
You know, I didn't send it to him.
What?
No.
Only to Ulrich?
Yeah.
Why?
I think it was just by chance. I got such a rebuff that I decided I wasn't going to ask anybody else.
But I would have thought you would ask the two of them at the same time.
No, I didn't do that because I don't know why. I can't tell you why. I think maybe because I was trying to be a friend of Ulrich's, which was impossible.
Yes,
to be.
Impossible. Because when we talk about times when you were younger, you never mention Halvar. Almost never. All about Ulrich.
Well, we had it was a life or death battle going on between.
Certainly, it was certainly important. No doubt about it. Yeah. But I'm curious that how Halvar doesn't figure.
Halvar was 6 years younger than me.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And he was out in the street and he had friends all over the place. And he played football so much so he wore out his shoes, his boots, his socks, everything. Mm. He was a sports nut.
How do you think he looked for... look to you as an older brother, a nearest older brother? It's traditional for a younger sibling to look up to their nearest older sibling.
You know, he came over here first with his whole family.
Yeah, I remember.
And we went skiing, you remember?
In Camrose.
Yeah.
We stayed in the teepee motel.
Yes. And they went skating too, and they got of course Canadian skates.
Yeah.
Especially Oscar.
Yeah.
And Christian, I think. Then we had the canoe trip together.
Yeah.
Then when Karin died, he came over, and I took him on a trip all into BC.
I remember that. That's right.
And then he came over the last time with his new partner.
Bodil.
And I took them into BC again. I wanted to go down to Bella Coola.
Yeah.
I take the ferry down to Port Hardy.
Yeah.
Drive down the island, take the ferry back to the Horseshoe Bay.
Yes.
And drive home.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we visited my friends, the Fahrenholzers in Kamloops. And we visited, I forget their name now, we knew them from Carstairs. He was a rancher.
Eaton,
yes, John Eaton.
Yeah.
And Daryl. We stopped to visit with them.
Yeah.
And they invited us to a delicious dinner, and then we went and found a motel room to stay in. But when we went down through the channels between the islands and the mainland,
yeah,
on that ferry trip, Yeah. All Bodil wanted to do was sit and play cards inside. She wasn't the least bit interested in anything of this trip.
Hmm. Well, that's her prerogative, I guess.
That's what?
That is her prerogative, I guess.
Yes, I guess so.
I guess so.
She was just bored by it.
Yeah, that's fine for her.
Yeah. So she needed company, so right. Halva and I ended up sitting playing cards with her.
Right.
And I said to Bodil, you know, this is a trip that you'll never do again.
Mm-hmm.
This is a trip that shows Bella Coola as a Norwegian settlement way back 150, 200 years ago.
Mm.
A missionary from Minnesota, a Norwegian minister, took his flock with him and they moved to Bella Coola and they felt miserable.
Huh.
They were all isolated. There was no road out.
Right.
And they were caught there with... and they built their log houses the Norwegian way. You can see the quality of their craftsmanship. It's marvelous. They took these big round logs, flattened them off on two sides with broad axes.
Yeah.
And the dovetailing is absolutely tight as tight can be. Beautiful. We saw a part of them. One was a church and one was a shop now, but it had been a private home.
Hmm.
Absolutely beautiful.
Hmm.
So I had a reserved place on the ferry. It could only take so many cars at a time.
Hmm.
I was really excited. I'd worked in the Chilcotin country between Williams Lake and Bella Coola. And I loved it. I was there in the first summer I was in Canada.
In 56. Yeah.
And then we drove on to Anaheim and then down that road that sometimes had a 15% grade on it.
Holy mackerel.
So I thought, you know, why are we going down there? Although I was also a little bit frightened by that.
Yeah.
But that the local people of Bella Coola built that road. They wanted to have communication.
Sure.
Not by water, but by land.
Yeah.
And some of these big transports that had to go down this road.
Wow. Logging trucks and so forth?
Or? Oh, yeah. And all the produce that came in.
Sure.
And all the wares that went up, presumably, for sale somewhere else. It was a very interesting trip because as we went down, we got into really beautiful coastal forest with huge Douglas fir and cedar and she hardly ever looked out the window the car.
That's surprising, eh?
Yeah. Huh. And then I made a really bad mistake. When I held my last show in Norway with Ulrik, I had assumed that every time that he came over here, I bent over backwards to do something with him so we could have an exploration together.
Yeah.
But he didn't do that when I went to have the show. I'd asked him if we could go and see Rondane together. It's mountains up against the Swedish border that Osmund Olavsson Vinje wrote so lovingly about. And I always wanted to see them. So I assumed that he was willing to do so. But when I got over there, I realized he wasn't remotely interested in doing anything except being with Bodil. And so I was left. And I overstayed my welcome with him. She didn't want me in the house. And so Halva said goodbye to me by saying, you don't sponge off people. That's what Bodil made him say. That was not Halva speaking.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized I couldn't have anything more to do with that kind of woman.
Mm-hmm.
You don't enter into a family and then start digging up dirt and being nasty just because other family members come to visit.
Mm.
So that was a bitterness between Halvar and I. He still doesn't understand what he did or didn't do.